Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Before we get into the news stories, we have some news of our own, but unfortunately Kieran's just, I don't know how I'm going to get through this pod, Kieran, because Kieran just gave me some news that's, it's really rocked me. And if I'm struggling, imagine how Kieran's going to be struggling. Share with the listeners, Kieran, what you said as we just tuned into each other.
Well, I was about to go make some rocket and caper mayo, and my capers are out of date.
And
I've been down to Waitrose, and they're out of stock.
Oh.
So it's a crisis in the Maguire household. Never mind the World Cup. This is what really matters.
You see, some people are struggling to make a decision whether to pay the heating bill or buy food, and Kieran's got no capers for his rocket and caper salad. This is heart-rending, Kieran. I think we should. I'm going to get Comic Relief involved. Is what I'm going to do. Next Red Nose Day, we're going to get a sad picture of Kieran holding up an empty packet of capers, pointing at the out-of-date date. I didn't know capers could go out of date.
Aren't they
little pickled things, aren't they?
They are, yes.
What's kept you so long? You're sitting on a. Never mind.
Well, you know what it's like when you stick things in a cupboard. And then you go, oh blimey, I haven't used those for a while. So I thought, right, rocket and caper mayo on some goes really well with fish and chips, and disaster.
Yeah, I had that decision on a bottle of limoncello, which I found at the back of a cupboard the other day, which is way past its sell-by date, but I figured it was alcohol and lemon, so it couldn't possibly be off, could it? How could that be off? Didn't next morning. I had a terrible headache next morning, but it's not as bad as your problem. Now, our news stories, Kieran. The first one, I'm afraid, is a sad story. We have some news about our upcoming live show, which was due to take place at Plymouth's Argyle's Home Park on Tuesday, the 13th of December. However, for various reasons, including the upcoming rail strikes, we know a lot of you were travelling from quite some distance, plus Plymouth are playing at home in the Papa John's Trophy that week, we've agreed with the club to postpone the show. I'm very sorry about that and the fact that it's quite short notice. We'll let you know the new date as soon as it's been agreed, but it will be in the new year. It's likely to be February or March. We hope everyone who's bought a ticket can make it, but if you can't, of course, you'll be able to get a full refund. On a brighter note, however, literally, the first ever Price of Football replica shirt will be available to pre-order from this coming Monday, December the 5th. I would say it will make a lovely Christmas present, but you won't get it before Christmas, which that's the level of admin cleverness we're working on. This is why we don't win awards, Kieran. We can't even get the shirts out in time for Christmas. It's a lovely shirt. There is a photograph somewhere along Kieran's social media, but we'll be revealing it in a I was going to say a spoof kit reveal, but it's not. It's going to be a proper shirt kit reveal, albeit one that's filmed at the Porson's Arms. It's white with a green and yellow trim. It's got a lovely stitched Price of Football FC badge with Finlay and Smudge on it, plus a Latin motto, which I'm not entirely sure is grammatically or factually correct, but it has the word amortize artus in it. Kieran obviously wanted amortize anus, but we decided that was definitely not going. But you can find a link to our online store. Have we got an online store? I didn't know we had an online store. But anyway,
we got nothing in it.
Apparently, if you go to priceoffootball.com, or our Twitter feed, you can find a link to our online store. And it's also in the description of this episode of your podcast app. We'll only make as many shirts as we get orders. So to make sure you pre-order yours as soon as the pre-sale period starts at 10 a.m. on Monday. The shirts are available in adult size, big adult size, giant adult size, and kid sizes. And all the profits we make will be going to Gamble Aware. So it's in a good cause. So having got our news out of the way, Kieran, and let's get on to actual world football news, none of which is as sad as the caper shortage. Mm. Even the shenanigans at Juventus are put into the shade by the caper shortage. But we start in Australia, Kieran. There's some Australians are quite unhappy with some Scottish people, Kieran.
Yes, this is Rangers. Rangers have sort of been on the show a bit too often recently, I think, for their liking. We spoke about when their accounts came out, they had a lawsuit which they settled with Mike Ashley. They've had to go and pay back some money in the form of a loan to former owner Dave King, and he's still being a bit snarky about the way the club's being run. They've got a dispute or a potential dispute with Elite Sports, who've gone into administration to do with Hummel and Castori. And now we have the promoters of the Sydney Cup. Now, as we're aware, during the World Cup, lots of clubs are doing things overseas. I think Palace aren't they playing overseas next week?
No, overseas are playing. They're coming to us. We've got Otago, and but we were in the Sydney Cup in the summer. We took part in some meaningless tournament in Australia. So actually, it might have been Perth. I don't think we're glamorous enough even for Sydney, to be perfectly honest.
So the promoters of the Sydney Cup. Now, the Sydney Cup was originally due to take place between Celtic, Rangers, Sydney FC, and another Australian club. Mm. And there's a lot of Celtic and Rangers fans in Australia. So this stirred up quite a lot of interest. And then Rangers pulled out. So the promoters are grumpy about this. They managed to get Everton as a replacement for Rangers, but Celtic ended up playing Everton, and there were 39,000 unsold seats or unsold tickets as far as the match was concerned. So the promoters saying, well, we've lost out here, so we're going to sue you for around about £1.6 million, which is a sizable amount. Rangers said, I think at the time in March, that they were unhappy because the match was being promoted as an Old Firm game. And they're saying, Old Firm matches are cup matches and league matches. The Rangers fans also were quite unhappy when this was announced. And they got a bit, going back to last March, because it was sort of being announced as Angie's, the Celtic manager's, he's Australian. It was being marketed as his homecoming. And Rangers fans said, hold on, it's Celtic versus Rangers. We're not the bit part. We are not the Andrew Ridgely in the Wham of the Old Firm. And therefore, they kicked off. The Rangers board were unhappy. They pulled out. So there's a lawsuit. Now, Rangers could be counterclaiming against the promoters for marketing the game in the wrong way. But, when it comes to all this, we've got Mike Ashley, we've got Elite Sports, we've got the promoters, we've got Rangers counterclaiming. We all know that there's only one winner in this, and it's those people that don't have to buy bottled capers. They can get them delivered by hand. It's our silver-tongued friends in the legal profession, in the accounting profession, and so on, who will just be going, well, this is money for old rope for us. We'll get involved. And it's money that drains out of the football business. And, we're fully aware that we've got disputes, and, we think the absolute world of Nick DeMarco, and I've met many of his legal friends, and they're all very smart people. But there's too many squabbles arriving in football, and negotiation's far better than litigation.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure off air Nick DeMarco did tell us that he has his capers delivered one by one by an individual toddler, just comes along with a silver salver with a caper on each. So it's a little bit naughty of the organisers promoting it as an Old Firm derby, because there's a subtext there, isn't it? It comes with this is going to be a bit tasty, it's going to be a bit naughty. There might be some trouble. I can understand why Rangers were unhappy about that. But so they could lose out twice, because presumably they lost out on a substantial amount of money by withdrawing from the tournament, and now could lose the best part of £2 million, which for a club like Rangers is a substantial amount of money, isn't it?
Yes. They are also having to, of course, go and play pay the manager a payoff. I mean, they did get, I think they got around about £2.5 million from Steven Gerrard going to Aston Villa. But you know, Van Bronckhorst, they just sacked, and they've also recruited the QPR ex-manager, so that would have cost them in compensation. At a time when, you know, we everybody knows that in Scotland, finishing second is finishing nowhere, as far as Rangers and Celtic are concerned, and they've drifted a wee bit behind Celtic as far as the table is concerned. So, there's a bit of angst at Ibrox.
Now, to quote the immortal John Shuttleworth, Man United's share price has been up and down like a bride's nightie.
Yes, it has. And mainly, we spoke last week just as the story had just broken, I think, earlier in that day, that there was a potential takeover of Manchester United. And, you know, and I'd estimated what I thought could be an asking price. And I said at the time, you know, it's way beyond the current share price. Well, if you'd had £1,000 worth of Manchester United shares last Tuesday morning, you'd now be sitting on a profit of £750 on your £1,000. So the share price has shot up. I think it's indicative of a bit of speculation. You know, people are hoping the deal's going to go through. So I think the shares are probably going to be sold for somewhere close to $28 to $30 if a deal goes through. Last week they were at 13, so people piled in. It's a bit like what you would have seen in trading places, that you try to get on the right side of a wave of buying or selling. And the share price last night was $22.85. I'm not going to be judgmental on this, but the biggest winners in this are the Glazer family. Over the course of 6 days, the value of their shares in Manchester United has increased by $1.56 billion, which is a ridiculous amount of money for people who've not put a dime into the club.
So do we know who is selling these shares, Kieran, that people are buying so avidly?
They're being sold on the market. So you never quite know. There are a couple of big investors in Manchester United as far as the shares which are available to be traded. But a lot of it will be, you know, I'll buy at 13, I'll sell at 16. Somebody else will buy it off me at 16. They'll sell at 19. And there's a bit of a rumble, as it were. And eventually you're going to peak and people are going to start to say, well, I'm going to take my profits now. And I expect to see, to use your the great John Suckleworth wage phrase, I expect to see a bit of up and downy over the course of the next few weeks. Certainly the initial splurge has petered out a bit, but we'll have to see what happens if this share price can be maintained or if it's still got some legs to go.
Is it possible, Kieran, therefore, that the Glazers had no intention of selling but have said they might just to raise the share price?
If they did that, it would be a very, very big breach of stock market rules.
Oh, okay, right. Okay.
And they'd get a severe slapping. Right. For that. So, you know, that would effectively be, could be accused of insider dealing, could be accused of misleading the market. The repercussions, I think, would be quite severe. So there's no evidence of that. And to be, you know, I'm not the Glazers' biggest fan, but the story broke before the club put out any pronouncements themselves.
Right.
Although, you know, the story must have come from somewhere in the first place.
There was talk in the first few days as well, Kieran, that there was an English billionaire was going to buy the club entirely, which seems to have gone away. So are we any closer to knowing who's interested in buying Manchester United?
No. What will be happening, it's a bit like, you know, if you've got a big posh house, you know, Steve Coogan's house in Ovingdean, where I play pitch and putt, that went up effectively for a glorified auction. So, you know, the agents put feelers out. They then sort of go around the people that they know who are looking to buy a big company or a big property or whatever it's going to be, and they try to drum up interest, and then they try to effectively set off prospective buyers against one another.
I knew Steve Coogan had a big house queue, and I didn't realise you could play pitch and putt in it. I like Steve. I used to write for Steve a long time ago. This next question, Kieran, confused me slightly. As you know, I can be a bear of small brain. And the first part of it, producer guy has written, the owner of the energy drink company, Rich Energy. And
that's his name.
That's the best bit of nominative determinism I've ever seen since that Red Bull bought that energy drink company. But wouldn't it be great? Because I thought, well, maybe his name is Rich Energy, so that's why he called it. But anyway, so whoever it is, the first part of the story involves the owner of Rich Energy. He could be going to court over the sale of Coventry City.
Yes. So we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that a local businessman, a guy called Doug King, was going to buy Coventry City, it would appear, from the current owners called Sisu, who are an offshore hedge fund, who, for reasons best known to themselves, bought the clubs. So that appeared to be sort of no news is good news, because what one would have assumed would have been happening is that Doug King would have been putting representations to the EFL in respect of the owners and directors test. And should the EFL be happy and the lawyers are happy on both sides, then we've got a sale. And then along comes a gentleman called William Storey. Now, William Storey makes Chris Kirchner look like Mary Poppins. He is a guy with an interesting backstory, for which I will fill in some of the details. He invented, I believe, some form of energy drink in 2009, which was such a brilliant product that he didn't bother to try to sell it till about 7 years later. And he set up this company called Rich Energy. And I've got the most recent accounts for Rich Energy. Rich Energy has three employees, according to its accounts, and it has in its bank account £581, ooh, which you're thinking, well, that's not necessarily going to be enough to buy a football club. Ooh. So that did seem a little bit strange. And then you look at his other activities in the world of sport. He has tried to buy Sunderland. He claims to have been on QPR's books, but he certainly didn't play for the first team. And then he got involved with Formula One. And first of all, he signed some sort of multi-year sponsorship deal, which was worth tens and tens of millions, with the Formula One team called Haas. And I think this was for 4 or 5 years. But he cancelled this after 4 or 5 months, blaming the politics and the PC attitude of Formula One. Now, I don't really follow Formula One particularly closely, but I've never really noticed what I'd describe as a PC attitude amongst the drivers or
not,
the
not yeah, famous it, for it, is it?
No, it's not exactly noted for progressive views. Although I'm a huge Lewis Hamilton fan in the way that he stands up for a number of causes. He then claims he was going to buy Force India, so rather than doing sponsorship, this time he's going to buy the whole shebang. And Force India said, well, that's news to us. That comes as a great surprise. And where is this £100 million of which you speak? So, it's all a bit strange. So what William Storey is now saying, I was in talks with Sisu to buy Coventry City Football Club, and I'd made quite a lot of progress in terms of the deal. And now this guy, Doug King's come from nowhere, and this is outrageous. Yeah, it's the equivalent of saying, you'd agreed to buy somebody's house, you'd exchange contracts, and then suddenly somebody else appears from nowhere and buys it. So William Storey is claiming to be the wounded party in all of this. And therefore, he's saying, well, I want some form of settlement, so I'm going to do a lawsuit, and so on. So we await developments, but Coventry City fans, they must have run over a black cat this year. The number of bad luck stories that they've had in terms of matches postponed and this, that, and the other. And now it looks as if they've found themselves a new owner, local lad, Coventry fan, you know, ticking lots of boxes. And William Story comes along and sticks his oar in, which he may be entitled to do. We cannot say one way or the other. But based on his track record, it does seem that he's sort of Chris Kirchner multiplied by Lawrence Bassini multiplied by Steve Dale.
Oh, wow. That's a big sum.
That's a big sum indeed.
Big sum, yeah. As we say on the Football Finance Pod, that's big sums, isn't it? I've never heard Swiss Ramble use that expression. God, that's big sums, isn't it? But with a Swiss accent, obviously. Lewis Hamilton, the firmest handshake I've ever felt in my life. It's incredible.
Oh, wow.
And a really strong neck. I was with, I won't name him, partly because I can't remember his name, but I was with an Australian Grand Prix. There's a young Australian Grand Prix driver did a TV show I was writing on, and he had several young ladies with him who were friends. And I said to him, mate, they seem to find you very attractive. He went, well, they're not made of wood, mate, are they? So there you go.
What?
he was a very confident young man. I spent my entire time in his company breathing in. it looks as though Paul Scally's time at Gillingham may be coming to a close, Kieran.
Yes. I think Paul Scally has been at Gillingham for 26, 27 years now.
As long as that. Wow. Blimey.
Yeah. And at Companies House, which, as you know, is my favourite website.
Indeed.
And not many people can say that in 2022. There was something which came through there in the last 48 hours, which indicates that Gillingham Football Club have taken out a charge, i.e. they've effectively taken out a mortgage with a gentleman called Bradley Gallinson. And you go, well, this needs Googling.
Mm.
So you Google it, and it turns out that Mr. Gallinson is an American guy who's head of a fund in the United States. Now, why would anybody lend to a football club that is currently 23rd in League Two with two wins all season? And in fact, you know, we are starting December. This show's going out at the start of December. They've scored six goals all season of December, as far as the league's concerned. So yeah, that's pretty grim stuff. So you'd wonder why somebody would lend to a football club under those circumstances. Paul Scally and his fellow directors have lent over £2 million to Gillingham Football Club. I believe they charge interest on that, which they are perfectly legally entitled to do. Mm. They've got a school somehow running at Gillingham as well. It's quite a different football club, but I think it's fair to say the relations between Paul Scally and the fan base have soured somewhat. He's not as young as he used to be. I don't think his health is necessarily 100%. I think he's looking for an exit route. Mm. So Bradley Gallinson, from doing a bit of ferreting around, his name has been mentioned as a potential new owner at Gillingham. So yeah, we're starting to get a few ducks pointing in the same direction at this stage. If so, Gillingham, you know, it's one of those clubs you think, well, where is it? I think it's the only club in Kent in the EFL. So, you know, big catchment area. There's no reason why it couldn't make more progress than where it is at present. But the existing owners have effectively operating on a budget, which you know, makes that quite a challenge.
I think even Paul Scally would agree that his reputation when he first went to Gillingham was, I think, wide boy. Is generous. I mean, he was a let's say a rough diamond, shall we say, but I don't think anybody would have predicted that he'd be there for more than two decades right from the start, because it did seem like he was looking to buy a club, you know, do it up a little bit and then sell it for a huge profit. But to be fair to him, I mean, he's kept at it, and as you say, he's kept putting money into the club, albeit he's charging them for it. So.
Yes, he's not the most popular person in Brighton, because when we got kicked out of the Goldstone because our former owners had sold it and hadn't bothered to find a replacement, we ended up playing there for two seasons, and yeah, there were a few issues, but yeah, you live to fight another day.
Yeah, so you sound like a Charlton fan, Kieran. That's what you get. You out of the goodness of your own heart, you give somebody a place to play football, and all they do is moan about it like a terrible tenant. Paul Scully's gone up in my estimation, I have to say, Kieran. That's all I'm going to say.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager, or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
This next story was predicted by a question that we had on our pod a couple of weeks ago, which we and Lincoln City have now confirmed that they have indeed submitted plans to the local council.
Yes. Lincoln are always on my good step as opposed to my naughty step, because they are one of those clubs that sees themselves as a community club that engages with the fans trust. It invites fans groups onto meetings as well to explain the situation. I've got to know Liam, who's the chief executive. I know Clive Nates a wee bit as well, who's effectively the owner. And the Lincoln model, as far as the investors are concerned, is that they tend to put in a little bit of money. Now, a little bit of money, by a little bit of money, I mean, yeah, normally yeah, a few hundred grand every couple of months to keep the club moving forwards. But they've applied for an expansion, in effect, which will it will bring in rail seating to effectively safe standing to the ground. I think there's going to be some sort of two-tier stand. They were originally going for three tiers, but as I said, current economic climate, it's just too risky. Because they're trying to get more fans into the ground, but. Yeah, we're going through a much broader economic challenge. So this will potentially increase the capacity of Sinsel Bank to 11,500, which is a decent size. It's partly been funded by grants. It's partly been funded by the owners. It's partly been funded by the fans putting money together as well. It's good to see a club which does clearly have a strategy and a vision, and has the approach of we will do this, but not all immediately. We will progress slowly, because that's a more sustainable approach. And you get more fans in, you get a better reputation, you can expand a wee bit more, and so on. So fair play to them. But it's certainly moving forwards.
And how much is this going to cost in total, Kieran? Did you say?
I think it's 1.6, 1.8 million, something like that. So. A sizable amount of money, but they've sourced the funding. They're not gambling by trying to do too much too quickly. You probably remember the George Reynolds Arena at Darlington.
Darlington, yeah. Oh my God, yeah. It weighed about 30,000 seaters, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of which you could probably see most of them.
Yeah. At the other end of the financial scale, 1.6, 1.8 million is loose change down the back of a sofa for Silver Lake. And they've increased their stake this week, haven't they, in the City Football Group?
Yes. So Silver Lake are an American investment fund, i.e. they've got no interest in football other than as a pure investment. And they bought 10% of the City Football Group. Now, the City Football Group consists of Manchester City and 11 other football clubs. Now, each of those other 11 other football clubs are just as important to the fans as Manchester City are to City fans. But Manchester City is very much sort of the mothership, as it were. So the City Football Group operates this multi-club model, which has advantages because you can sell front of shirt deals all over the world. you can get a common color of kit, you can get common sponsorship deals. So it's a really interesting business model, and also you can shift players around to ensure that everybody gets consistency of training and experience in the first teams elsewhere. So it's intriguing what's happening there. Silver Lake liked this, so they bought 10% of the City Football Group a couple of years ago for $500 million. In September, they bought some more shares, and the other major shareholders, apart from Sheikh Mansour, were the China Media Group. Now, the Chinese government a few years ago was very keen on having investment in football. So they bought, they encouraged Chinese organizations, companies, and individuals to buy clubs in the Premier League and in Italy as well. And then things have cooled. It's the same as far as Chinese football is concerned. The Chinese Super League, you might remember the likes of Hulk, and I think Carlos Tevez went there as well. Yeah, they were being paid an absolute fortune to play in China. And Oscar and Chelsea sold a few players, and everybody was making a lot of money out of it. And then the Chinese government said, this really doesn't align with the manifesto of the Chinese Communist Party. Mm. And therefore, it says, now we're not going to go ahead with that. So China Media Group did own around about 8%, just under 8% of the City Football Group. They've sold practically all of their shares now. Half of them have gone to Silver Lake for a substantial sum, and half have gone back to Sheikh Mansour himself. So we now have an American investment fund owning around about 18% of the City Football Group, and they will be looking for a financial return on the investment. And the reason why I think this is intriguing is I've always said that the Manchester, Sheikh Mansour is not looking for a financial return. He's looking to win trophies. He's treating it as a classic trophy asset, which you spend a lot of money on. You're not too worried about the bottom line. All of the focus is on achievements, increasing the fame of Manchester City in terms of its on-field achievements, and therefore indirectly enhancing the how many people know of Sheikh Mansour around the world.
Mm. We have three overseas stories, Kieran, to finish this week's pod. And we start in Italy with what I can only describe, Kieran, as shenanigans at one of your favourite clubs. I think shenanigans is the only word that covers this story. And it's a big one, isn't it? Big shenanigans.
It's huge, yes. Juventus is a listed company, and we were talking earlier about when we spoke about Manchester United, that if your shares are listed on the stock exchange, they are subject to more complex rules and a greater degree of scrutiny than a private company, because I could own some shares in Manchester United and I could sell them to you, and there's got to be good faith between us. Whereas in a private company, normally the shares tend to be owned by the people who are involved at board level, because you're not able to physically buy and sell shares on a market on a day-by-day basis. So Juventus is one of the few clubs which is listed on the Italian stock exchange. And we've spoken before about some unusual transfers of players taking place. And I think the most notorious of those was when Juventus signed Arthur from Barcelona, and they swapped him for Pjanic, and people said, okay, yeah, those players were right. They're probably worth 20 to 25 mil, which is decent prices, but it's not going to get people overexcited. You're not going to open up the training ground for a £20 million signing. But then it came through that these deals were going through for 65 to 70 million. And then you go, there must be a reason behind that. And of course, if I sign a player for 20 million and I sell him for 25, I make a profit of 5 million. We won't worry about amortization. If I sign that same player for 20 million and I sell him for 70, I make a profit of 50 million. So what's happened here is that by swapping these two players, both Juventus and Barcelona have booked a profit of £50 million on this deal. And then the Italian sort of financial police have said, well, that's not the only unusual transfer dealing that Juventus appear to have been linked with. They've sold a few other players at large profits as well. And it all just looks unusual.
Mm.
Now, Juventus successfully defended these charges because how much is the Mona Lisa worth? How much is a Banksy worth? How much is a Picasso worth? Well, we don't know. It's worth what somebody's prepared to pay for it. So Juventus' defence was, well, look, there's only one Pjanic around. You know, if Barcelona are prepared to pay 70 million or 65 million for him, whatever it's going to be, then that's what he's worth. And the financial police looked at it and said, well, yeah, but he's a bit Bobbins. But Juventus says, well, yeah, that's not our problem. Yeah, we found some mug who was prepared to, we mugged him off. And that's what they used as their successful defence. So that appeared to have sort of got them out of a oops.
Hello, the capers have arrived.
Yes, sorry about that. That's that's the theme tune to Halloween, which is my my ringtone. I'm letting people into my little world here, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
But then on Monday night this week, an announcement came from Juventus in a very very pompous and clearly agonised over press release that Andrea Agnelli, who is the chairman of Juventus, and the whole board of directors had resigned together. And they said, oh, there's ongoing legal and accounting issues. And to be fair, there's some really good websites out there, some really good Twitter accounts. I'd urge people to follow Italia Football. It is absolutely superb. And what appears to have been the case is that Juventus had said that during lockdown, when Juventus were hit pretty badly, excuse me.
Bless you.
They'd managed to get players to agree to take pay cuts and pay deferrals for a period of 4 months. Now, the accusations which now appear to be coming through was that, well, actually, the players only took a pay cut for 1 month and they were being paid through other means, than the normal payroll, all of which it seems very, very strange. The Juventus have said, right, we're now going to publish new accounts. You don't do that if you've got nothing to hide. Mm. But we are seeing a sort of defence coming out from the club, and they are saying what's happened is normal accounting. Well, yep, I've been an accountant for a few years, and I've never called something normal which involves you having to go and completely restate your accounts and the whole board of directors resigning at the same time. So it does sound pretty weird, and we will await developments. There's a bit of schadenfreude arising here because Andrea Agnelli, as we know, is still one of the big cheerleaders of Super League. And I think the three Super League clubs, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Juventus, they appear to be having a very close relationship with an organisation called A22, who turned up in Brussels this week to try to persuade the EU, because we're expecting a ruling on the Super League on around about the 15th or 16th of December. And the head of A22 saying, well, you know, you've got it completely wrong about these Super League clubs. You know, they're all above board, and they want greater transparency and better governance, and they just want a fairer deal for football. And all the journalists were writing this down and go, oh, blimey, perhaps we've got Barcelona and Real Madrid, in case anybody's forgotten, were both subject to fines by the EU for taking illegal state aid. And now we've got Juventus, who were relegated from Serie A a few years ago for financial misdemeanors, and now we've got this other event taking place. So, you know, if that's good transparency, if that's good governance, I just fear for the rest of football. You know, if that's the gold standard to which we should be trying to follow, it does seem a bit messy, to put it mildly. Mm.
As you know, Kieran, I love art. I'm very fond of art. I don't like the Mona Lisa. She's got that look on her face which indicates that you've done something to annoy her, but she won't tell you what it is. Which
well, that normally takes about 3 hours to unravel, I find.
This business, Kieran, of issuing new accounts, is that well? You've indicated it's not common, but does that not imply that this they either made a mistake in the old accounts or the old accounts were wrong? Surely that raises suspicion levels very, very high, does it not?
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, you only change them if there's a reason to change them, and it's either error or fraud. It's as simple as that. And according to Juventus's own press release, that the whole thing's being blown out of proportion. Well, if that's the case, why resign the whole board?
Yeah. All of them. Yeah. We've ascertained, Kieran, that because we're not very good at admin, our football shirts won't be available for Christmas. But if you are looking to buy something for the loved one in your life, there's a minority stake in Paris Saint-Germain going. I don't know how you'd wrap that, but who's interested in buying them?
Well, we've got the Qatari owners are wanting to sell 15% of Paris Saint-Germain. They've seen what's happened at Chelsea. They've seen what's happening at Manchester United and Liverpool. They are looking for what we refer to as a whale. And a whale is somebody that's made an awful lot of money over the course of the last decade. And there's a lot of whales. A lot of people have made an absolute fortune in recent years, mainly from technology and social media and so on. And there's a case for saying, you know, why buy 15% of a football club, which is effectively run as a state club because of the relationship, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. You know, what involvement are you going to have? It's going to cost you somewhere in the region of €500 million. So you know, there's a case for saying the Ferrero Rocher bought on December the 24th, walking home from the local garage, is probably a better deal than writing out a check to the Qatari owners for €500 million when you get absolutely nothing in return. Because if you say to them, I think we should be doing this, or, yeah, we should be expanding the stadium, we should be signing these players, I'm not very happy with the manager, they say, well, we own 85%, on your bike, pal.
You'd probably get a decent seat, I imagine, wouldn't you? And the food,
I would hope so.
The food would be all right, wouldn't it? Our last story, Kieran, almost against my better wishes, I've been thoroughly enjoying watching the football at this World Cup, but quite a few people have been unable to watch it, Kieran, have they, because of the actions of one country?
Yes, and this does seem very strange. The Qatari and the Saudi Arabian government, I think it's fair to say, they fell out a few years ago, and Qatar was effectively embargoed through various geographical links, so you couldn't land ships there unless you went through very long routes and so on. So things were quite messy between Qatar and quite a few of the Gulf states, of which Saudi Arabia was the most significant. And then there was a thawing of that relationship, and my knowledge of Middle Eastern geopolitics is a bit sketchy, but There was an entente cordiale, and Saudi Arabia and the Qatari emirs have been seen at matches together. So, you know, you would think that, oh, well, is this good? You know, and we're going to say, has there been any good that's come through sort of off-field activities? If two countries can now talk to each other, then that is good, as far as I'm concerned. But what is weird is that back in Saudi Arabia itself, the matches can be seen on a combination of free-to-air and subscription channels. So I think we take for granted that we will see every single match of the World Cup forever going forwards on BBC or ITV. And I think that's part of our football culture. Although, if you take a look at the legislation, it's only the World Cup final that's deemed to be a crown jewel and has to be made free to air. So, we could see perhaps Sky or somebody else come in for it in the future. But I think they'd be a bit reluctant because I think they know they'd get a backlash from
us. Yeah, of course.
But in other countries, that culture is different, and different doesn't mean better or worse. It's just different. So, as far as Saudi Arabia was concerned, fans could watch on free to air. Or they could use a subscription channel. And then all of a sudden, the subscription channel got blocked. And this was a few days into the World Cup. I think that the Saudi games themselves were shown because they were originally on free-to-air anyway, because the Saudi government wanted as many of its citizens to be able to see it. And Saudi Arabia, they are pretty football potty over there.
Yeah.
So it all now seems a bit uncertain as to how things are developing with regard to that relationship. But Saudi Arabia, I think it's fair to say, has a bit of history because Bein Sports, which has the Middle Eastern rights for the Champions League, for the Premier League and so on, it was being blocked in Saudi Arabia for a few years, and somebody was pirating the matches, which meant that Bein were losing an absolute fortune as a result because people were using the pirated product, which was a lot cheaper. People say, well, surely that's no different from if you've got a mate called Big Dave down the pub who's got some dodgy sticks. And I say, well, I think it's slightly different because it appeared to have been doing this piracy, it appeared to be doing it sort of at corporate level or higher.
That's it. This is Wednesday, Kieran. We're recording Wednesdays, 8 minutes yes. to seven. So Saudi Arabia about to kick off. They could qualify for the knockout stage, which would be fantastic for football
yes.
in that area. Obviously, we'll be watching Argentina-Poland or Lewandowski versus Messi, as BBC Radio have been calling it all day. Now, we do have an interview for you this week with programmes expert Ian Hine. He's not just an expert on football programmes. He specialises in collecting Brighton and Hove Albion programmes, Kieran, which is very, very niche.
I'm an upstanding man.
Really, very niche. I was so well behaved. I was quite proud of myself for being so well behaved with you and another Brighton fan on. But instead of playing it to you now, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to put the interview out as a standalone episode tomorrow. We're not always going to do this with our interviews, but we are conscious that some of our Thursday episodes have got a little bit, shall we say, Lawrence of Arabia in scale in recent weeks. So let us know what you think. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to join them, that'd be very kind of you. You can make a small monthly contribution to the pod, and you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show on our Monday edition, then it's questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, folks, thanks so much for your support, which is coming across in many ways. I know the Spotify playlists have come out today, and I believe a few of you have watched our podcast listened to our podcast more than any others over the course of the year. And we're really humbled that you love the show so much. So that's one way of thank you very much for the support. Patreon's another vehicle for doing that. But also, you can go on to your podcast app, and you can give us a review. Give us 5 stars. It really helps us in the charts. It helps us to have the credibility to when we're trying to book guests and so on. And by all accounts, it doesn't matter what you say as far as the actual written report is concerned. So you could even say you'd rather have the show presented by Robert Lewandowski and Bobby Davro, and it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference. In fact, I'd listen to it myself.
Little Bobby Lewandowski, that would be great, wouldn't it? We went, a group of us went to Poland a couple of years back, Krakow, and one of our younger friends decided that instead of saying please and thank you, he was going to say Lewandowski to every Polish person he spoke to, which lasted about 40 minutes before someone threatened to chin him, which none of us speak Polish, but that was the gist clearly of what was being said to him. Bobby Drav, God love him. That's the only thing you can say about Bobby Drav, God love him. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. price of football.